It's time for Lincoln County Connections on KNPT, KWDP, and KBCH. Here's your host, Casey Miller.
Welcome to Lincoln County Connections. I'm Casey Miller, Lincoln County's Public Information Officer. Thanks for joining us for Connections today. We have Brittany Russell. Good morning, Brittany.
Good morning.
She is an education and outreach specialist at the Siletz Community Health Clinic with the CARE program. They are providing confidential, safe, and culturally appropriate services to Native American victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, dating violence, and stalking within Lincoln County. We're going to be discussing National Stalking Awareness Month. I've got to get my resources here. I know we have some talking points, Brittany, but it's National Stalking Awareness Month. And just to give kind of an overview, this happens in January, and what are the other kinds of violence issues that you recognize throughout the year?
So January is National Stalking Awareness Month, and it actually is also Human Trafficking Awareness Month, which isn't something I work with much directly, but it actually is quite a bit of a problem in Oregon, especially up in Portland and along the I-5 corridor. In February, we have Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, which is another big one that I work with. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So those are the big ones for myself and for the CARE program.
Yeah, I think to kind of put in perspective of what you do, you are located out at the Siletz Community Health Clinic?
Yes.
Give me an idea. I know you said you're working on a lot of grant writing, too, but as an outreach person, what's the day in the life like for you, or a week in the life like for you?
It all depends on the week. I do a lot of like coordinating for training. Sometimes I will get someone to come in and present on a topic related to domestic violence or sexual assault, and then I'll work on coordinating to get community members or other staff members to attend those trainings. I go down to the Siletz Valley School and speak to some of the classes about healthy relationships, bystander intervention, sexual assault, bullying, teen dating violence. I also work on keeping our Facebook page updated. I put out a monthly e-newsletter with articles, information in it. We have a sexual assault response and resource circle that I run meetings for, and that involves myself and different professionals from like the Toledo Police Department, Crossroads Nonviolence Center, working together to help end sexual assault in the Siletz community, to raise awareness of sexual assault, and also to provide better resources for victims. I also now, in the absence of an advocate coordinator, I am temporarily serving as the advocate, so I work with any clients that come in needing services.
You know, and let's maybe clarify, too, that for the services that you provide, now that you're kind of getting into that grant writing duties, a lot of this is generated, you know, through grants, and generally, where do they come from?
Our program is actually 100% funded through grants. We are funded through the Department of Justice Office on Violence Against Women, but there are lots of different resources, both state and federal, to provide resources for domestic violence, sexual assault, any sort of violence type of things. There are resources for working with victims.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Brittany Russell. She's an education and outreach specialist with the CARE program. And if you've listened to the program Connections before or are aware of the kinds of resources that there are in the community for victims of crime, it's an important resource that we need and have. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment on Lincoln County Connections. And we're back with Lincoln County Connections Thursdays here on Yquinna Bay Communications, which includes KWDP. It also includes KBCH and KNPT. Great opportunity for us to come to you Thursdays at 9 to talk to people like Brittany Russell, who's with us today, Siletz Community Health Clinic and the CARE program. You gave us an overview earlier of the kinds of work that you do. Maybe we could start talking about stalking, Brittany. And, you know, as a part of National Stalking Awareness Month, maybe one thing that's clear to point out or further defined is that this is a crime. What do you think are the general public's conceptions of stalking, and what are the realities?
A lot of people, when you think of stalking, the first thing that comes to mind is maybe that movie star that like gets stalked by the different fans, or you think of maybe a crime show you've seen where, you know, this person is being stalked by this stranger who happened to see him or her in the grocery store and just developed a fascination. And while that sort of stuff does happen in the world of stalking, the reality is that most victims of stalking actually know their stalker. It's not a random stranger. For women, about 66% of female victims and 41% of male victims, their stalker was actually a current or former intimate partner. So it often occurs in the context in conjunction with domestic violence.
So with that in mind, maybe a little bit about what's going on. Is this part of the control process? I mean, what's the function of the stalking?
Stalkers, it is a form of control for them. It helps them gain that power, like, oh, I know where you are at all times. I know what you're doing. I have this power over you. And they instill that fear in their victim. And that's kind of the thing they go for is, you know, getting that fear in their victim. So it can be as simple as, maybe a woman has been stalked by her ex-partner, and she has moved a couple times, and he always seems to find her, and maybe he always leaves flowers for her as his way of saying, hey, I know where you are. You know, and she moved to a new house, and she thinks, you know, she's safe in this new city, in this new state, and she comes home from work one day to find a package of roses on her door.
Mm-hmm.
And to someone, that may seem like, oh, what a sweet gesture, someone sent you flowers, you know, how cute. But for her, that's a sign that, you know, he found me again. He knows where I am, I'm not safe, you know, I just, you know, started to settle in here, and now I have to move again.
Okay, so that's interesting, because I tended to think of stalking as something about for maybe the stalker to figure out where their victim is. But you're saying there's just as much a part of it that can be letting that person know that they're stalking, that they're there.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's definitely not always the stalker kind of being, you know, hidden and hiding in the bushes. They often want to let that victim know that they know. And there is also the cases, you know, where they'll use GPS tracking, maybe put a GPS tracker in their car so they can, you know, find where they are at all times. And that's often used in when it's in conjunction with domestic violence. But it's definitely about, you know, having that.
Okay,
having that fear in their victim.
So there is definite the cases out there where stalkers actually find technology to track their victims.
Definitely. Technology is, especially now, becoming more and more common. Even with, there's actually settings on your phone and on Facebook where if I were to take a picture right now and post that picture to Facebook, if I did not have GPS disabled on my phone, somebody could look at that picture and they would be able to look at the properties of that picture and find out exactly where I was at the time that I took that, and actually pinpoint us to the exact room that we are in right now.
So it is a real crime.
Definitely.
And with that in mind, can you just give us some things that you help people identify, and what would be the process of taking those real, you know, tangible data points to local authorities? What is the process?
So part of the safety planning process for someone who's a victim of stalking, encouraging them to not interact with their stalker, because that can actually encourage the behavior. And one of the big things is we encourage them to keep an incident log or some sort of record where if they see their stalker maybe outside of their work or outside of a place they stay at often, you know, they make a record of the date and the time and like what happened. And then also if they receive flowers, if they receive emails or text messages, any sort of unwanted contact, that they record that, because that way when they go to the police or if they end up, you know, going to prosecute something, that they have that record.
It However, sounds like being very specific is a good idea, too.
But you, at the same time, you want to make sure you don't put any certain revealing details, because if you keep an incident log and then you use that during a trial to try to get a conviction, those records are going to be available for the stalker and his or her lawyers as well. So you want to make sure there's no identifying information maybe about other individuals or about your children or specific addresses that may give that stalker information that you didn't want them to have.
Okay, so create a log.
Creating a log and, you know, working on that safety plan. And if you do move, there are options. There's a program called the Address Confidentiality Program, mm-hmm. where if you move because of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, anything like that, you can actually register to get a P.O. box. It's a P.O. box in Salem, and you can use that on your driver's license for any records that may be considered public that mm-hmm. a stalker or someone could use to find you by searching. Maybe you purchased a house and they would have your name associated with that address, but rather it'll have information about your P.O. box in Salem, so that stalker or that former partner is not able to find you. So that's a great resource for people who want to be able to keep their address hidden.
Would the description of stalking change based on jurisdiction? I mean, is that something you can get that information from your local victim's assistance, or where would you get that information to find out what in, say, Lincoln County defines stalking?
You could get a hold of a different, depending on where you are, of a victim assistance person, or, you know, anybody can find the law. In general, it is defined as a course of conduct that would cause a reasonable person to feel fear. And there are some variations from between jurisdictions, but in general, if what is being done to you would cause a reasonable person to feel fear, then it would be considered stalking.
Okay, we're talking to Brittany Russell. She's an outreach and education specialist with the Celeste Care Program. It is National Stalking Awareness Month, and we've got more to come. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Thank you for joining us on Lincoln County Connections. I'm Casey Miller here with Brittany Russell. She's an education and outreach specialist with the CARE program. It's National Stalking Awareness Month, and that is our discussion today. I do want to tell you that close to the end of the program, we will provide you with some resources and ways you can receive help if you're a victim of domestic violence or stalking. But we want to talk a little bit about some facts. What are some things people might not realize about stalking, Brittany?
Well, I want to start with just a little bit of numbers, because I do like numbers sometimes. There are about 6.6 million people in the United States that are stalked each year.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 6 women and 1 in 19 men have experienced some level of stalking in their lifetime. So it does affect women more frequently than men, mm-hmm. but it still is something that definitely affects both genders. And as I mentioned earlier, about 66% of female victims and 41% of male victims actually knew where a current or former intimate partner their stalker was. So it is something that occurs in the context of domestic violence or, you know, in some sort of relationship context, interpersonal violence.
Hmm.
Victims of stalking often end up losing time from work due to stalking. They have to, you know, move around a bunch to get away from their stalker. It can be hard on any children because they're moving so much. You know, you're missing school, you're losing friends, you have to hop around so much. You're always living in fear, you know, looking over your shoulder, wondering, you know, when your stalker will find you next or if your stalker will escalate. You know, it may start with just, you know, leaving the unwanted gifts or sending lots of unwanted text messages or phone calls. But it can escalate to threatening with weapons or even escalate to murder. There's actually 79% of abused female victims of homicide report having been stalked at the same time they were being abused. So it occurred a lot with victims who were murdered by a partner.
So there is a correlation between, you know, that violence may be an end result of stalking behavior.
Yeah, it can often escalate to the violence, whether it starts as just threats, or even if it just ends as threats, or harming maybe pets. Stalkers will often threaten to harm pets or other family members. So the stalking victim ends up not worrying not only about themselves, but about their loved ones and the other people around them.
Yeah. Yeah, and how does someone sort of decipher between what may be, I don't know, a romantic gesture, like you said, and the flowers, versus how do you navigate people through identifying things when they are starting to get inappropriate? This has got to be an individual thing, it sounds
yeah,
like.
A lot of it is, you know, sitting down, and if someone thinks that they may be a victim of stalking, sitting down and talking with an advocate, whether mm-hmm. it be someone from the care program or my sister's place or victim's assistance advocate, anywhere, even just calling, you know, a domestic violence hotline or a stalking hotline, just to talk to someone, you know, this is what's happening to me. Yeah. Is this stalking? But in general, if it's unwanted and they are feeling fearful and they, you know, any of those, they would be considered stalking, and they should definitely take steps to do anything they can to get themselves out of the situation.
Well, with a couple minutes here, Brittany, let's talk about resources. You're obviously a place to begin. How do we reach you? Can we see you in person? Does it start with a phone call? What works best?
What works best for me is whatever works for the client. If you want to give me a call, my phone number is 541-272-7978, mm-hmm. and that's my cell phone, which I have at all times. And then I can also be reached in my office at 541-444-9679. So if somebody wants to give me a call and talk over the phone, you know, if they want to keep it confidential, they don't need to give me their name, mm-hmm. and they can just explain the situation to me, and I can do my best to help them. If somebody wants to meet in person, they can give me a call ahead of time and set up a time to meet. We can meet at the clinic in my office, or we can meet at a different location if they don't feel safe coming to the clinic mm-hmm. for whatever reason. So I just do whatever I can to work with the client for whatever's easiest for them.
So your hours are flexible when it comes to meeting with people?
Definitely.
Not necessarily an 8 to 5 thing?
Definitely. I mean, you know, I'm in the office 8 to 4:30, so if somebody wants to meet outside of those hours, you know, give me a call first so we can make the arrangements. But
and another way I've found that I'm getting more information about the kind of work that you do in domestic violence in the community is liking your Facebook page. Which
definitely.
It's just a great feed to be informed and learn.
So yeah, you can look us up at facebook.com/sletscare. We have a lot of, I try to post links at least a few times a week, whether it be to articles about current or local events or just facts and information. There's always some great resources up there.
Well, thank you, Brittany Russell. Appreciate all the work that you do. And you, thanks for listening to us today. We appreciate you tuning into the program. We'll see you next week.